Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. My guest this morning is Alex Gutierrez, an author who found inspiration from within his incredible personal journey of discovering his spiritual roots. His new book, Mother Mary's Resurrection, A Businessman's Awakening Through Our Universal Mother, touches the heart and moves the soul of its readers. Alex was born in Chile and currently lives in Sedona, Arizona. He graduated as an engineer and worked in marketing and management most of his career. After successfully building his company, Alex left the position of CEO in early 2008 to pursue his new dream, to write a book about his spiritual journey. His book, Mother Mary's Resurrection, received the Finalist Award in the category of spirituality from the 2009 Next Generation Indie Books Awards. Good morning, Alex, and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Good morning to the listeners as well. I'm doing very well this morning. Thank you very much. It's a beautiful
Wonderful.
Day here in Sedona.
It's a pleasure having you here. I have to tell you, I really enjoyed reading your book. I love history first and foremost, and especially biblical history. And your labor of love is truly a work of written art. I have to tell you that, because it's quite fascinating, chapter after chapter, and it flows. And the way you did it, where you interject, the Bibles, the quotes, and different things that you have put in, is just totally fascinating. I would like us to start this morning talking about your journey of self-discovery. And Alex, please walk us through your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay, well, that's a long question. I'll try to be as brief as I can. I was born in Chile of what I call a perfectly functional family. Had a loving family, parents. I have a brother and a sister. And although my father died in 1989, my mother still lives in Chile, and we see her often traveling back and forth. And there's nothing particularly special about my childhood. I would say that I grew up as a perfectly average and normal child, very friendly. I soon realized that I had received a lot of talents, gift talents from God from a young age, because I could do, most of the things without a lot of effort. I always had good grades in school without having to study a lot, and I was socially welcomed by most people. I was good in sports, so not particularly very strong in any category, but very balanced, I would say. I got a good amount of talents in different areas that gave me a balanced life. And I grew up that way. My parents were not church-going people, so although we were all Catholics and I was born and baptized Catholic, we did not attend church. My parents were basically would only take us to church when there was a family event, a baptism or a marriage or a wedding. So I didn't know much about my faith, went to lay school, never had a formal religious education, and I grew up that way. My parents did teach us very good values, and I thank them for that, because we always learned and applied the golden rule, never to do to other people what you don't want done onto you. So I think from that standpoint, they filled the spiritual fountain in my life in a proper way. I graduated from college as an engineer. I became a successful member of one of the largest corporations in the U.S., one of the top 20 multinational companies, and I started working there. And very quickly had success in what I was doing. I climbed the corporate ladder, as I would say, and reached interesting positions. I was manager in one of the subsidiaries in Latin America, and running a a $300 million operation. I had more than 1,000 people under my control in terms of management. They reached a point in my life where I felt that that wasn't enough for me. I was intrigued, and I had been intrigued for a while in becoming an entrepreneur. So I decided to quit that job and start my own company. And with another friend, we started this new business. And initially, it went very well. But after about 3 years, things started to weaken. And it was interesting because several things started happening. By that time, I was married and had three children. Mm-hmm. And my marriage was not in a good shape. I guess I hadn't been paying enough attention to my relationship with my wife and focusing so much on my job. And I found myself one day with the sad situation that my wife wanted to put an end to our marriage after 13 years and as I say, three kids. And that was a pretty shocking experience. At the same time, my business was not doing very well, so financially I wasn't being able to procure the amount of money that we needed to run the family. So my wife had her own job and she was procuring. So in a way, that really unsettled my life until that moment, and everything had worked perfectly, and suddenly things started to turn sour. To put the icing on the cake, I found myself sick with cancer. I went to the doctor one day, and he had me run some tests and found that I had cancer, and it was one of the most invasive type of cancer that you can have, and he immediately recommended surgery. So wow. I did. I went ahead and took that. And then as I was in the hospital, lying on that bed, of the hospital alone that night, while waiting for the surgery to take place the following day, I was really in shock. And I'm not understanding what I had done in my life, because suddenly my personal life was in shambles, my health definitely in problems, and my work not coming out as I had planned. So at that point, it was clear that I needed to make some changes. And there's this old lady that came into the room bringing the communion for the sick, right? Mm-hmm. And I got really scared, because I thought that was the
end of things.
Last rites, right? that they hadn't told me something that the operation or my situation was more serious than I had originally anticipated. So after taking the communion, my heart was just broke down and started crying and softened up by our Lord. And And at that time, I realized that, yes, I had to make some important changes in my life. I wasn't sure what they were at the time, but I knew I had to change a lot of things. I had been so much focused on my ego, building my own self-esteem and not worrying so much about my spirituality, that it was clear that God was sending me these things to put me on the right track. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I came out of the operation well. I recovered and decided to take a path of holistic medicine, as opposed to following the advice of the doctors to undergo chemotherapy. That didn't resonate well with me, so I went to New York and had what became famous later on, Dr. Atkins, on the Atkins diet. At the time, was known for having success treating cancer with a special diet that he had. My father had died of cancer just a few years earlier, so
yeah.
I had already done all the research and was pretty familiar with the situation. So when I found myself in that place, I decided to undergo that treatment. And it went very well, thank God. I started a path of meditation. I hadn't meditated before, so I started meditating, taking all the supplements and herbs and vitamins that had been prescribed. The diet was very strict with no alcohol, no sugar, no caffeine, none of the good things. So in this situation, and by then I was already separated, living alone, I had the opportunity, I guess, to really explore my own spirituality. And through meditation and through reading, I started slowly to better understand my role in life and the path that I should be taking. Mm-hmm. And wow, you're not going to believe this. I have two hummingbirds in front of my window looking at me right now. They just left. A marvelous salutation from Mother Nature.
Yeah.
So that's when I really got into the frame of learning. I read the philosophers. I read many of the self-help books. And at the same time, I could clearly see that I was getting over this cancer problem because the medical tests that had been run on me were performing well, coming out with good results. And I also attended a retreat in 1997 in Miami. I was living in Miami at the time, and it was a retreat run. When I was invited, I didn't want to go because I associated it with the church, but it was a Catholic retreat run by laymen. It did not involve the participation of priests. So because of that, I said, well, okay, that sounds interesting. I should go. And when I went to that retreat, I discovered Christ. I really had a very special experience because I didn't know Christ. And I didn't know how to pray the Our Father or the Hail Mary. And for the first time, I understood what that meant in my heart, not in my mind. You know, I had been reading a lot, but I understood in my heart what the love of Christ meant. Mm-hmm. And that got me interested in studying more about Christianity and reading a lot more about Christianity. So I did that. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of the saints, obviously the Bible, several times, and out of all of that research came the understanding to eventually write this book. So that's kind of the summary of the mm-hmm. not the last several years, but the more the earlier part of my life. I don't know if you want me to keep going.
That's wonderful.
Okay.
Because I wanted my audience to listen to the path that you've taken and what you've gone through in life, because a lot of times when we go through a personal transformation from inside out, and people don't really realize what we walk through. And I can relate to you because, as I mentioned to you, you know, you were a CEO of your company, very successful, and I was with a very successful company. I was a chief operating officer, and we ran restaurants, and I built so many different restaurants, and over a certain period of time, it takes so much time. And you were always, and you can relate to this, because we're always thinking about the past because we could do something better. And then we're always thinking about 5, 10, 15 years projection of the future or what we can accomplish. And often the time, we miss living in the present moment. And
absolutely,
that's what happened, and it caught up with us. Of course, it caught up with us in many different ways, to each their own, so to speak. But what happens is that it sort of gives us a grounding. Certain things that happens in our life is God's way of, putting a little, it's like what I relate, when you're driving down the road and all of a sudden there's somebody holding a stop sign and says, you need to kind of stop and smell the roses a little bit and kind of just take a look at how you are evaluating life. And obviously you have a tremendous paradigm shift during that time in your life where your marriage, with your marriage, with your personal life, as well as you personally with your health issues. And I agree with you from a standpoint of, and some people can't relate to this, but how we feel, because we are a closed system within ourselves, how we feel emotionally. And you mentioned that in your book, and I like that very much, where that will dictate on whether we're going to be sick or not sick. I think to a certain extent we have control over that. And it's the power that we have from within, the thoughts that we have, and we, our body automatically, it's a huge factory, it's a very delicate factory, and it will produce whatever enzymes or whatever the antibiotics that it needs to take care of you. And so that was kind of unique. So I could relate to that very, very much as far as, you know, what you were talking about in terms of what you went through and then just having to realize, like, wow, I'm missing all this. And it's like a lot of times, even right now, people are talking about, let's go out there into space and explore the universe. That's beautiful and fantastic, and I definitely want to do that. But then sometimes we take it for granted, Mother Earth have so much to offer. The depths of the oceans, the heights of the mountains and everything else, they forget that sometimes paradise is within our reach, but, you know, we just don't realize that.
Yeah, it's right here in front of us, yeah.
Precisely, and if you are a billionaire at birth, and you spend, to me, you know, barring from growing up and, you know, maybe to the age of 10 or 12 or whatever, and then you start you know, every day of your life, and you, I think you start to explore Mother Earth, I don't think you can truly see things that have already been found, not much less say, you know, you're going out to 27,000, you know, feet in the Indian Ocean to find something, but just the things that the wonders of the world just to see, I don't think you can see everything. And so that's the uniqueness of what this is all about, the experience that you have shared. Let's talk about your experiences of Majigari, because I know that you've used a lot of references about Majigari. Why is this intrigued you so much, the messages that you got from this particular site?
Yes, as I was explaining, discovering Christ was a major breakthrough in my life. And then as I was reading, you come upon Mary, the mother of Christ. And the more I read about Mary, the more puzzled I became, because there is not much that is known about her life. And then I realized that Mary has been appearing in different parts of the world. One of them is Medjugorje, as you say. Mm-hmm. And she's giving messages. She's been giving messages to us since 1981 in Medjugorje. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's more than, you know, that's like 28 years.
Right.
It's incredible. And you realize that very few people know, and when people know, they're just not interested in finding out. And I said, how come you would not be interested in a message from Mary? I wondered in my mind, what if it was Christ? If it was Christ speaking Medjugorje, would people be paying more attention? Mm-hmm. And I thought that, I arrived at the conclusion that he probably, people would be paying more attention, because Christ seems to be more, you know, obviously top of mind. He's the Savior, and he's we're all in a way Christ-centric, and the Mother of Christ has a role, but definitely not as important as the one that Christ had. But still, I found that the fact that that there's so little interest or attention paid on these apparitions, and Medjugorje is not the only one. There are many others. There's apparitions in the U.S. There's apparitions in Latin America, a lot of them. In fact, my wife, who's from El Salvador, got me, you know, made me aware that Mary was appearing in this place in El Salvador, which, you know, we've been there and listened to the visionary and spoken to her, and some really interesting pictures have been captured there. But Medjugorje is definitely, in the current times, the most representative. And the reason for this is that Mary has appeared to six different people. They were children the first time that they started receiving the messages. Now they're all adults. Mary still talks to three of these on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And more than, you know, by 2007, more than 10,000 messages had been given to these children, just in that single place. So it's as if Mary has installed herself in Medjugorje. And I wondered, you know, why is this happening? There are no coincidences in God's plan. And so, I started researching the life of Mary. And as I say, that brought me to a lot of interesting information that I wasn't aware of. When I started reading the saints and the visionaries, I found more information that is not in the Bible. And there's some question about whether you should believe in things that are not straight out of Scripture. And the reality is that all of the Christian tradition all of the Christian Scripture is based on oral tradition. That's the way it all started. And right. The 27 books of the New Testament are based on as you would call it, word of mouth, which is basically oral tradition. Eventually they got written up, you know, many years after Christ had died and through one of the church councils around the year 300, the men that had assembled there decided, okay, these are the texts that are going to go in the Bible, and these others are not. And there was, of course, no woman on that council, and I think a lot of the information that related to Mary got left aside. And this is an important thing that people need to understand. We have to place ourselves in the context of the time. At the time of Christ and Mary, women had a very secondary role. I mean, don't even think that it's close to what we have now. No, it was they couldn't sit and have dinner in the same table that men were eating. Women could not participate in any type of political activities. They were seen as second-class citizens, and they were looked upon with a real negative aspect. Men did so.
Right.
From that standpoint, when you think, you place yourself in that context, it's not difficult to imagine then that there was no place for women in the organized church, the organized nascent Christian church. So.
Right.
There was no interest in promoting the story of Mary. There's the story of Mary Magdalene also got left aside. So we find in the Bible that the information that's in there is very limited. And most of what we know about Mary has been carried through oral tradition.
Right.
And it's been written by the church fathers and by many other people, but then also by these incredible visionaries. And when you dig into the life of Mary through the work of the visionaries, you find some extraordinary information.
Right.
So that's the reason why I got intrigued about Medjugorje. First, because of the amount of presence, messages, and second, the fact that there are some really important messages that Mary is giving us that have to do with the future of our life as we know it. So people don't seem to be wanting to pay attention. It's like you're driving a car directly to an abyss, and you have people on the sides telling you, hey, watch it, stop, I'm here, wait, with a sign up, hold on, let me talk to you.
Right.
And you keep driving and you don't pay attention to the signs, that seems to be the path that mankind is taking right now.
Right.
So I think the purpose of me writing this book and talking about Mary is bringing to the forefront the importance of her message.
Right. That's true. It's very, very true. I mean, I talk about that also in my book, in the sense that we talk about unconditional love, motherly love, and it's far more powerful. If you have that feeling from inside out, then you look at things differently. And a lot of times when you talk about unconditional love, and people relate that to personal issues, and it's not, because you can apply that to any situations, including business. And then because what happens is that you take people into consideration. Many people don't realize this, in the business world especially. Products do sell because of its own merit. Ultimately, everyone, we are in the people's business. We are definitely in the people's business, and people don't realize that. You and I realize that, but there are a lot of people that don't realize that. You had also used a lot of references from Anne Catherine Emmerich. Her vision, her writings played a very important role in your book, and she's no doubt a truly gifted and enlightened woman. Please tell us a little bit more about her visions, her writing that helped you in putting your book together.
Yeah, Catherine Emmerich was a German nun, a mystic and a visionary. She was born in 1774, and she died in 1824.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give another year here just for perspective, something we're going to talk. Mm-hmm. The Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered in 1947, so she was more than 120 years before these scrolls came up to life. She lived for 12 years. I say it again, 12 years with no food except the Holy Communion and water.
Mm-hmm.
And she had all of the stigmas of Christ, the wounds of Christ in her body.
Right.
She was beatified by Pope John Paul II and is on her way to becoming a saint. Well, Anne Catherine Emmerich wrote incredible things from her visions about the life of Christ and Mary. When she had her visions, it was as if she was in the place at the time of the event, so she can describe in full detail what was going on, like you're watching the events. And as you read this wonderful piece of work, you realize that, you know, this woman definitely was inspired. She is what would be considered today a channel, right? I mean, people
mm-hmm.
don't seem to have any problem in going to and having a session and paying $100 for a channel session with somebody that channels extraterrestrials or channels special beings or spirits, and they receive information. And I'm not discounting any of that. All that is valid.
Right,
but
right.
For some reason, people shy away from looking at the lives of these incredible people that have been the greatest channels of all time. And Anne Catherine Emmerich talks a lot about Mary in the context of the life of Christ. I mean, her focus is obviously the life of Christ, but of all of the events that were surrounding the life of Christ, Mary definitely had a huge and important role. So I picked the information that was most relevant about Mary and included that in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Another important reference was Maria Valtorta, which is an Italian nurse.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And similar to Valtorta, she wrote incredible things. She's a lot more recent. She lived. She died in 1961, so not mm-hmm. too long ago. And her work is amazing in terms of how Mary lived. And there was a lot of information in there that is valid. It actually mm-hmm. complements Scripture. It doesn't contradict Scripture in any way. And the Church has said that, yeah, we can read this information, and there's no reason to doubt their supernatural origin. That's what
right.
Pope Pius XII said about Valtorta's work, for example. He said there's no need to give an opinion about its origin, whether it is extraordinary or not. Who reads it will understand, you know. So,
right.
you know, they're never going to fully endorse the work of visionaries, but, you know, if you read the work, you come to the conclusion that this cannot be but divinely inspired.
Right. Right. That's very true. Well, in your book, you also wrote about the Ark of Testimony versus the Ark of the Covenant, and that eventually became the Ark of the Covenant, and eventually became a new Ark of Covenant. And please elaborate about that.
Yes. There's been so much mystery associated with the Ark of the Covenant. And within the work of Anne Catherine Emmerich, we learn that the Ark of the Covenant contained not just the tables of the law and some of the relics of the patriarchs, but it contained in it what she calls the blessing. And the blessing was some energetic substance that was preserved in the ark and carried the essence of what would be Mary's supernatural conception and eventually Christ's supernatural conception. So that is the reason why the ark was protected and carried for so many years by the Israelites, and they paid so much homage to the ark, because there was something extremely sacred. They did not know what the purpose of this blessing was in the ark, and they did not know exactly what was in it, except from the physical figures. But they did know that they had to protect and carry the ark, and they did.
Right.
After the birth of Mary, this blessing, and the story is beautiful, narrated by Anne Catherine Emmerich. The blessing passes on to Joseph, Mary's father, when he's kneeling in front of the ark. And because of that, then when he gets together with Anne, Mary's mother, the Immaculate Conception of Mary takes place, which is also another really unique and interesting piece. To me, it was like finding a piece of a puzzle, because I never had understood the Immaculate Conception. And as I read these lines, I said, oh my God, so the Immaculate Conception is the conception of Mary. It is not the conception of Christ. And I went back to the Catholic, my catechism. I had a book that I was, and I researched it, and it said, yeah, in fact, the Immaculate Conception is the conception of Mary. It's not the conception of Christ. But the Church doesn't say anything about the Immaculate Conception of Mary being without the intercourse of her parents. They just say that she was conceived without sin or preserved from original sin, which to me are very vague words and terms. I mean, you can make anything out of that. Original sin has been so much associated with some type of sexual activity at the time of Adam and Eve, and it has absolutely nothing to do with that. And that's another topic that's covered in the book. We could talk about a whole program on original sin later on. But the fact is that the visionaries, not just Anne Catherine Emmerich, but Valtort as well and others, have explained that the Immaculate Conception was when Mary was conceived without the intercourse of her parents. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. It makes sense that Christ would be born of the most purest womb possible. Therefore, Mary, was that perfect womb. Mary was the new Ark of the Covenant. Mm-hmm. When the blessing passes on to Mary, she becomes the new Ark of the Covenant, mm-hmm. the new covenant that's going to be brought about with the birth of Christ. Mm-hmm. So all of that is explained in more detail in the book. But the fact that the ark had been carried for so long, and the Israelites had been the chosen people for this event to take place, started to make a whole lot more sense. Mary had existed since the beginning of times. Her coming had been prepared very carefully by God. And, the Israelites were selected as the group of people from whom she was to be born. Mary was the daughter of Anne, who was an Essene. And as I said earlier, the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered much later, 1950s. And Anne Catherine Emmerich talks about so many of the things that were confirmed true, the roles were discovered. She talked about the lives of the Essenes and all, a lot of the information that there was no way that she could know. And all of this just continues to build the foundation that Mary is a very important piece of God's plan. And again, she's appearing now, not by coincidence, and she's appearing now more than ever in the last 19 centuries. Why? why is she appearing now more than all of the time accumulated in the earlier 19th centuries? Why didn't she appear, you know, earlier?
Right.
People should wonder and say, wow, this, you know, this is something that I also need to investigate. And there is a plan. There's certainly a plan, and there are no coincidences in God's plan. Everything is in divine order.
Right. No, that's interesting, because when I read that in your book, I thought it was you were very elaborate in terms of laying everything out, the continuity between the God's plan from the very beginning of time, and this is that's why I referred it to as labor of love, because it does take a lot of time to basically decipher all these information and put it in the easy to read context that you have done. So that's truly fascinating. I want to go back, and I know in the very beginning of the book you talked something about the blessings of God's will, the mysterious blessings of God's will. And I know that in process of, you know, putting this book together, and obviously it's a moving experience for you and everything else, how has that relate to you in your personal life and things that you reflect back? Sometimes that things happen to us, we just don't think about it, and then having an opportunity to reflect back and you think, wow, God's hand is in it. So tell us something, you know, more on your personal own experience that you go through.
Yes, Johnny, absolutely. Before I talk about my personal experience with God's will, I think, just to close on the prior subject, that it is God's will that the divine feminine aspect resurges now. I think humanity was not ready for the divine feminine energy to arise earlier. That's why we're seeing it now, and I think you know, in this century we'll see a lot more of that. And the more we get closer to the feminine energy, the more progress, spiritual progress, we will be making. Mm-hmm. And the mysterious blessing of God's will, if you will, is something that I have been trying to decipher for the last 10 years of my life. I've been, you know, I came to the conclusion that if you try to live your life following God's will or according to God's will or surrendering to God's will, things work out for you more easily. You don't have to stumble so much. And it's been certainly the truth in the latter part of these 10 years, you know, the last 4 or 5 years of my life, as I've walked this path and understood this better, with so many examples. I'm going to give you a few, but it's so important that we understand that following God's will is in no way something that should be hard. It's in no way something that is going to cause suffering. For some reason, there's this belief, and I think it's programmed in our DNA that if you follow God, you know, it means that you have to suffer. And no, it's completely the opposite thing. Mm-hmm. Christ and Mary did the suffering for us, so we wouldn't have to suffer. And the rest is creation of your own mind. Our minds can create whatever we want through intention. We'll get to that later. But mm-hmm. if you find a way to identify why you came to this life, And God gave us, each of us, gave us many talents. And the way we use these talents has to do with how we're going to be viewed by God. And sometimes we're not using these talents in the appropriate way. We're not using these talents to reach the perfection of God. We're not using these talents to help our brothers and sisters. We're not using these talents to reach perfection and find ourselves to the grace of God and be, you know, once again joined in love and as I call it in the garden of paradise again. I mean, there's no reason why we can't be there now. So following God's will is the lesson that Mary clearly depicted us in her life. When she was 14 years old and she was in the temple, she was asked by the priest that she had to leave the temple and had to marry, and she didn't want to, you know, get married. But there was this belief that the Savior was going to come from one of the virgins in the temple, so they all had to leave at 14 years of age and get married. It was the Jewish custom. So Mary didn't have any choice. She followed God's will in that case, and she married Joseph. And then soon after that, you know, Archangel Gabriel appears and says, Hail Mary, full of grace. And he tells her, you're going to have a child of God. And, you know, Mary could have said, she had free will, Mary could have said, well,
right,
would you mind coming back in 2 or 3 years? You know, I just got married. I'd like to enjoy my married life with Joseph for a while before having children, or I haven't finished my studies, or I want to take a trip to Europe. You know, we always are full of excuses, and God talks to us in similar ways. To our hearts, and if we listen carefully, if we shut down the TV, we shut down the iPod, and we shut down the Facebooks, and we sit down in nature or in quiet and just listen to our hearts, we're going to hear the voice of God and what He has to say for us. Mm-hmm. But if we never allow that silence to occur, there's no way He's going to be able to communicate with us. So
right.
The first thing is to find the silence and the peace in our lives to be able to experience God in our hearts. And when we do, we get these instincts, right? Oh, you know, I should be doing this, or I should be doing that. Or many times we have an idea, oh, I want to do this. We never take the time to bounce that idea in our hearts with God. And we say, okay, God, what do you think? You know, should I actually take this job, or should I? I mean, we ask our mothers, we ask our friends, we ask everybody. We talk it in the kitchen with Mama many times, right? But we need to find our own kitchen, and this may be an idea for you, Johnny. We need to find our own kitchen.
It's from within. Yeah.
Where we can go inside and speak with God and speak with Mary, speak with whoever is your spiritual guide, and there you will listen to this will. And I have been feeling this call for a long time. By the end of 2007, mm-hmm. 2006, we came with my wife to Sedona for a 5-day vacation in a spa here, beautiful place in Sedona, and we fell in love with Sedona. I can't explain to you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the most beautiful places on earth. And that's one factor. But there was something else. When I was on the plane heading back to Miami, I felt pain in my heart, like the pain I had felt in my heart when I was leaving my own country, Chile, when I was little. I hadn't felt that pain for a long time, not even when I go back home. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't feel it anymore. And suddenly I was feeling it here in Sedona. Why? You know, never lived here before.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, you know, it'd be nice to buy a piece of land here and perhaps retire in Sedona, or come and live in Sedona, or find a way to come back here. And she said, you know what, I'm feeling the same way.
Mm.
So, you know, God talks to us in different ways, but that is one way God was talking to me, saying, you know, perhaps you should move out of Miami, and this is one of the places that I like that I like for you.
Do you think that's something that it's God's timing?
Definitely, definitely. Again, it's, you know, when God talks to you in a way that you can actually experience it with your feelings, it's definitely God's timing.
Mm-hmm.
And other times, you know, the information is not as clear. We don't have the same, you know, heart-based feeling. You know, it's more wishy-washy. But when
right.
I feel it that strong, I think it's definitely God's timing. And it's so God's timing, and it was so God's timing in our case, that when we opened the door for our lives in Sedona, things started happening. It was like the Niagara Falls. We had had our house for sale for a while, for more than a year, and it hadn't sold, and suddenly, puff, it sold. And, and you know, I was, as you said, the CEO of a corporation, an international corporation in Miami, and traveling back and forth, Europe and Latin America and different places in the U.S. And I thought that my partners would not support the idea that I would be running this business out of Sedona. Guess what? When I tell them, they said, it's fine. You can go, and you can run it from there. Because, you know, in a way, Miami was one of the many offices, so I still have to spend time in Mexico, Brazil, and other several other countries. So it wasn't that crazy of an idea. So they supported that. And it didn't take – we came here in December of 06. By July 07, we had moved to Sedona. So when God wants something to happen, he will open the doors and things will start really flowing. And that's what I say, that the whole universe conspires and helps you accomplish your your goal. Because then you're not working alone, or you're not working against, you know.
Well, it's effortless. I think one of the things that that you have experienced is something that you don't have to really – you know, it's not hard. It's not difficult. It's effortless. I mean, you have to put in some effort, don't get me wrong, but it's easy.
Yes.
And, it's, you know, like, least resistance, path of very, you know, of the least resistance, and you're able to accomplish things that normally that you yourself know, even though that we can manhandle certain things per se, situations, that we didn't have to.
Yes. And the best analogy I can give you is the when you're in a boat and you're rowing in a boat, if you put the tiller in the hands of God, he will decide the direction that the boat will go. But if you don't row, you're not going anywhere.
Right.
In fact, wind's going to carry you in the opposite direction. So God may actually point the way, but you have to do the work. You have to row.
I mean, you do have to have some efforts, but then if, you know, but God gave you the roadmap, and I realize that sometimes, I mean, it's, we do make choices, you know, which door do you go through? Door one, two, three, and every path has its own, every, you know, every game plan has its own path, and every path leads to its own perfection, basically. And, but when you follow your heart, then you will take, obviously choose the right path. And that's what you did, and it became effortless. I want to talk about your wife briefly, because I know it's a wonderful experience that you have gone through, and this is something that you found out through your research, that people have the ability of healing others with the use of their hands. And your wife, Beatrice, obviously has this ability too. And how moving was it for you to experience this?
Well, Beatrice had always had this like pain in her hands that that came on and off, and you know, she felt like this energy was moving through her body and through her hands, and she had mentioned this to other people, and then somebody said, well, you know, you should try Reiki, which is a an Eastern tradition, a healing tradition that uses the hands for healing, and she did, and she started experiencing that. And when I saw that, I was reluctant, not very open to some of those ideas, but when I saw what Beatrice was doing, and then it was a complete shift, you know, paradigm shift in my mind. It was clear all of us have the capacity to heal using our hands, and it's not that we do the healing. We're just conduits. We're just channels of healing for God's energy to flow to the person that requires the healing. And it's a two-way street. The person that's receiving the healing has to be willing and wanting the healing, and then the person that is giving the healing has to really get his ego aside and allow it to happen. And like everything in life, you know, there's people that are very spiritually connected and driven, and you see that I'm doing incredible things in healings, and there's other people who have their ego in the way, and you can clearly see, you know, the different effects when people have their ego in between it really clouds the waters and doesn't allow for things to work as well as they should. So I became myself a Reiki master to do this healing work. Took another course in another technique, Chinese technique called La Ho Chi, which also uses the hands. And you know, we do it ourselves within the family. We do it to, you know, I don't make a living. I'm not interested in doing that. But if anybody needs or requires or wants, I'm always available, and my wife is always available as well for this type of activity and healing. Some people make a living out of that. We do not. We don't charge or don't, you know, just do it because we think we should all do it. You know, all human beings should do it. Christ did it, you know, and many other people in the Bible do healing. And there's the laying of the hands is a practice.
It's a very powerful term, actually, because it's mentioned several times, and people don't realize that. Now, and you mentioned something which is very interesting, because you did mention that the recipient has to believe and has to let go and believe in faith. And that's very important, too, because if you don't believe in faith, you may verbalize your intentions, but then if you don't, I guess, put, you know, the zinc in it or whatever you want to call it, then it doesn't happen. And that brings us to, you know, you talk about intention prayers. Tell us a little bit about the difference, you know, what makes intention prayers unique.
Well, we have the capacity to create the lives that we want. And thanks to the progress of science, we are understanding this more. And for people like me that need a rational explanation of how things work, it has helped me a lot to read and understand how all of the new theories in physics show that we can actually change our life if we change our minds and our thoughts. So the intention prayer that I use is actually writing down on a piece of paper what you want your life to be. And it has to be an effort that is done, again, without ego. You shouldn't write in there, I want to live in a house with this characteristic in this particular place. And, you know, if you do that, then you are definitely not allowing any space for God's will to influence your intentions. Mm-hmm. But if you write, I want to live in a beautiful house in contact with nature where I can find peace and, you know, where I'm close to work and I'm close to schools, and you don't specify a location or you don't specify the type of house, then you're allowing God and you're allowing the universe. And they really appreciate that. All of the angelic beings really appreciate when you allow them to participate in your lives. Mm-hmm. They are ready to help. They're there to help us. But if we don't invite them, they can't come. So when you do your intention prayers, if you do them in an open way, with a lot of faith, as you said, Johnny, and a lot of trust that they only want the best for us.
Right.
You know, these things will actually materialize. I had written in my intention prayers at least 5 years before this house that I live here in Sedona materialized. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. You know, my intention prayers have, that of 5 years ago, have all come true.
Come to fruition,
You know, because I did them open. I didn't, you know.
You weren't going too detailed, but at the same time, you set the perimeters, the boundaries of what you felt comfortable and you feel at peace with. And that's what you accomplish. And Alex, what you find is that, you know, we do that in business all the time. It's interesting because, you know, you and I can relate to this because certainly you know that we do a 5-year game plan, 10-year game plan, 15, 25 years. Of course, we have a, you know, an annual, recycling review, thorough detail of where we are and where we're heading to and everything else.
Yeah.
But sometimes we fail to do that for our personal life.
Yeah.
And what you have done is you make a big difference, you know, by what you just mentioned.
I would venture to say, Johnny, that in business, we do all the planning, but we don't leave any space for God.
No, it's true. Yeah.
So I think I thought that was the direction you were heading, but
I think
if we did in business do that, then you know, it would probably render a lot better results than the ones that
Very true, because I was looking more from the context of the structural you know, organization. I've always said that there's so many things in business that you can bring the good stuff into the personal life. Sometimes we tend to be lack. And then there's so much of the good stuff at home in our personal life that we can inject into our professional life, our business life, that actually, in all actuality, and that's the human element back into it, that actually can make it run much more fluid than you think. You know, you don't have to be too structured, but what that's coming back to that balance we talk about, the yin and the yang and the right hand and the left hand, you know, you will have a good, you know, it's like swinging a golf club, regardless whether you're right hand or left hand player, you can hit the ball, but it's not that good when you, you know, use both hands. you know, and that's what this is all about. So, how can someone purchase your book?
Well, you can go to your local store and ask for it, and they'll place a special order if they don't have it in stock.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask for Mother Mary's Resurrection by Alex Gutierrez. You can buy it in Amazon.com, or you can buy it in BarnesandNoble.com, another online website. I think Target has it online, and Books a Million and several other, you know, the typical places where people buy online will find it. So it's Mother Mary's Resurrection by Alex Gutierrez.
And I presume they can go to your website in the case they would like to book you for their special events, to invite you to come to talk to their groups and organization?
That's correct. It's www.mothermarysresurrection.com. And you can also purchase the book in my website. Mm-hmm. And you can contact me through the website. There's my email. It's very easy, author@MotherMarysResurrection.com.
Okay.
So that's author as author of a book.
Fantastic.
But, yeah, many different places.
That's wonderful. What can we expect for you from you in 2010?
Well, Johnny, I'm before the end of this year, I'm going to be traveling more of the west side of the U.S. I'm going to be in California, Central California, in the next couple of months. And the Spanish version of my book is coming out in less than 2 months. It's called La Resurrección de la Virgen María. And so I'm going to be attending the Latin markets as well for the launch of the book in the Phoenix area, Miami area, Southern California. So I think I'm going to be mostly on this side and also South Florida by the end of this year. And then next year, I don't have a schedule yet, but I do plan to be, you know, on the major cities across the U.S. And promoting the book, but also working on another initiative that has to do with inspiration as well, but in the business area, as you were saying, that which has to do with corporate ethics. So I'm going to be doing some work in that area as well, combining both.
Fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. As a guest on my show, do you have any recipes for living you would like to share with any of our listeners?
Yes. I think the times are important times. Mary is asking us to pay attention to what she's telling us, and I urge people to find out what these messages are, because they are very relevant and significant for your lives. I also believe that everybody should write down their own intention prayers and work on that and create the world that they want to create for their lives and their families. And there's a lot of good ideas in the book about how you can do that. And pray, put yourself in silence, find time during the day, half an hour at least, if you can, to be completely in silence and meditate. Or you don't have to take any special classes to meditate and be in silence, but that's the first step to any spiritual path, is finding time in silence. If you can, try to do some fasting, which also helps your spirit grow.
Mm-hmm.
That's more difficult to a lot of people, but it's very effective. And prayer. So pray, fast, be in silence, write your intentions.
That's fantastic. Alex, thank you very much for the great recipe and for spending this hour with us on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday and as we continue on our theme From My Mama's Kitchen Recommends. My guest will be Deborah Cotty. She's a mom, author, internationally published columnist, and a highly sought-after speaker because she is a gifted humorist. She is also known for communicating sound biblical concepts with refreshing, light-hearted style. We will be discussing her latest book, Mom Needs Chocolate. For additional information, please check FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com, FromMyMamasKitchen.com, which now has my weekly Recipes for Living blog post that comes out every Monday morning. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening this morning. Have a great week. And Alex, thank you again. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you to the listeners as well.
All right. Bye-bye.